Hello, Paul. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to a very special Empire Podcast interview special. That's right. Comedy Bang Bang is my favorite podcast in the whole wide world. And if you don't know what it is, if you've never experienced the magnificent madcap majesty, I strongly suggest you seek it out. If you like comedy, and if you like laughing, you'll thank me later. It is, in essence, a fake talk show on which real person Scott Aukerman, who created and hosts Comedy Bang Bang, interviews three special guests, sometimes could be more, you never know, every episode. One of them is a real person, a famous. The other two are characters improvised by an array of incredible improv comics, including, but not restricted to, Paul F. Tompkins, Lauren Lapkus, Andy Daly, Lily Sullivan, Sean Diston, Dan Lippert, Tim Balls, Edie Patterson, Carl Tart, Will Hines, Lisa Gilroy, Patty Guggenheim, Ryan Gall, and many, many more. It is frequently touched with genius. Jason Mantzoukas is lurking around somewhere a lot of the time as well, and is kind of a big deal. Why am I telling you this? Well, apart from having nothing better to do, I'm telling you this for two reasons. One, Comedy Bang Bang, or CBB as it can be called, is going on a tour of the UK and Ireland starting this Wednesday, July 22nd in the year of our Lord 2026 at the Soho Theatre Walthamstow. That's confusing. Even more confusing, it's in London before they head on to the likes of Bristol, Manchester, Leeds, Glasgow and Dublin, which is where I will be seeing them next week. The second reason I'm telling you this is because last week when I was in LA, not only did I talk to John Woo, interview special available in this very feed, but also Scott Aukerman, who was kind enough to invite me, a stranger, into his home studio where Comedy Bang Bang is recorded and talk to me about the show and his career for around an hour. Yes, that's right, folks. We sat at the very table where Comedy Bang Bang is recorded, emblazoned with signatures from some of the LOL luminaries who've been on the show over the years. I thought about scribbling my name when Scott had his back turned, but he's a wily foe, and he didn't turn his back for a single second. We chatted about Scott's movie career as well, because he has been an actor of sorts, a writer as well, although he didn't talk Shark Tale, and a director, having co-created Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis, and in fact directed the 2019 movie based on that show, which is another fake chat show. Anyway, I loved doing this. Scott is a giant on the comedy scene. CBB has brought me countless hours of joy. Well, I could probably count them, but who's counting? And if you're into it, then hopefully you'll get a real kick out of this deep dive into one of the biggest and best podcasts around. And if you're not into it, well, hey, maybe this will get you into it. I don't know. I'm not the boss of you. Anyway, here it is, me talking to Scott Aukerman about Comedy Bang Bang and movies and stuff. Enjoy. We are delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by, he's an actor, he's a writer.
I wouldn't lead with actor, but but okay. I mean, I'll give it to you, but all right.
I'm going alphabetical order.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay.
But now
actor,
I realize,
podcaster? Uh-oh.
I realize I put writer ahead of director. Okay. He's an actor. He's a director. Mm-hmm. He's a writer. But most of all, would you say this? He's a podcaster.
I mean, unfortunately, yes. I mean, you're listening to me on one.
I know you hate podcaster, Scott. Scott Aukerman.
Hello.
Host of Comedy Bang Bang.
Hello.
Is here on the Empire Podcast. How are you? I know you hate podcasters when you have a podcaster on your show. It's the lowest of the low.
Well, I don't hate them. I, in fact, love all people. But in terms of guest rankings, you know, are you ever excited to see that someone's interviewing a podcaster? I mean,
it depends what the podcast is.
I guess so.
But if it's Aunt Betty's duvets, then no. Not my favorite podcast, by the way.
That is a good one, though. It's not your favorite, but it should be up in your top three.
It's top 100 for me.
Oh, okay.
At the moment, of all duvet-related podcasts.
Okay, top 100 of duvet-related?
Do you not have a top 100 duvet-related podcast?
I guess I don't, but I would think it would be in the top. I mean, I don't know that there are 100, are there?
There are. There's exactly 101.
Oh, and, I see. Okay, so it's in the top one. Oh, so
she's
there's
bang on 100. Yeah.
Okay, so there's a terrible one after.
It's not a very good podcast, okay, to be honest. But Comedy Bang Bang, Scott, is my favorite podcast.
My gosh,
and
thank you.
I am very, very honored to be here, where the magic happens. This is your studio.
This is LA. It. We're here in Los Angeles, and
I will not give away your assassination coordinates.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I felt a little weird giving them to you, but you haven't tried to kill me yet, so I appreciate that.
It took a while to get in here.
Yeah, did that just sort of stifle your whatever rage you had, just trying to navigate how to enter?
I'm far too tired now, yeah. Okay, I was trying to scuttle over the fence, but here we are. We're here for many, many reasons, Scott, but one is that I was in town. I was delighted that you were open to making this happen.
Yes.
Because you guys are coming on tour. You're going to be coming over to the UK and Ireland.
UK very, and very Ireland, soon. Yes. Very soon, in late July. And yes, we're doing 6 shows. London, Manchester, Leeds, Bristol, Glasgow, and Ireland. Yeah. Dublin.
The lovely Dublin. Lovely,
yes,
Dublin.
Yes.
Which is where I'm going to be seeing you guys, which is really, yes, really weird because I live in London, but the dates clash with Comic-Con, which I assume you didn't think about when you were booking these things.
I wonder if that came up. I can't remember. But there's a London Comic-Con. That's great. Where is it?
Oh, San Diego. The London Comic-Con is in San Diego.
Oh, yes.
When
yes.
I say Comic-Con, I think I just mean San Diego. Let's just automatically
yes.
what I mean.
Sorry. Yes. I didn't think about that. So you have to go to Comic-Con.
Okay. I got to go to Comic-Con. But luckily, my wife and I are going to go over to Dublin. We're going to have a lovely weekend of it.
Great.
We're going to go see Comedy Bang Bang. And hopefully people who listen to this as well will come over.
I hope so.
Or one of the other 5 shows. Is entirely up to them. What can
it is up to them. I thought of assigning people the venues that they have to go to, but unfortunately they get to make their choices. What should people expect? Well, if you don't know what Comedy Bang Bang is, God bless you. I'm going to spoil it for you right now, but it's a podcast. In a macro sense, it's entertainment. Then getting more specific, it's a podcast. Getting even more specific than that, it is a podcast hosted by myself. Yes. More specific than Scott that Bradley. Even, it's a fake talk show. It's an improvised podcast, which is in the format of a fake talk show.
Yep.
I am the host of the podcast, and I am myself, or at least a version of myself. And then I have comedians on playing fake guests. So a lot of people that you have seen on television or movies or heard in animation, they all come on and they play fake guests who are crazy and have strange lives, and we talk to them about that.
And you know nothing about what they're going to be doing?
No.
All I know is
I know the name of the character, and I know how to describe them when I say, coming up on the show, we have this. And that's all I ask. So we never know what we're going to talk about. The conversations are not pre-planned. The conversations have never been had before. We've never had them before. And so none of us really know what's going to happen when we're out there.
Which is exhilarating/terrifying. Which is important in a nutshell, I guess. Maybe.
There's been a couple of times where it's hit me in the middle of the show how strange this is that nothing is planned, that we're doing a show where we haven't thought about what we're going to do at all. And that's hit me in the middle of a couple of shows, and suddenly I get very hot under the collar, and I mean, not mad, as that expression goes, but
get the fuck out of my house.
Yeah, but I do start freaking out a little bit of like, this is strange. Why are we doing this? But it is. I try to keep the being terrified out of my mind, and I don't really think about it anymore. So it's
okay.
In fact, I don't really prepare all that much for the show mentally, except this particular tour on, I believe, the 3rd show. I got the name of the city we were in wrong. And one of the performers' names wrong. And I said to myself, I got to start kind of mentally locking in before I do the show a little bit.
Okay.
Because it really, I think I would get freaked out a little bit if I started thinking about like, okay, what am I going to do tonight? What am I going to do tonight? You know what I mean? It's It's better to like, let it not be in my mind. And then they just say, you're on. And then I walk out.
So what do you do now? Do you write the name of the venue on your hand, the city?
I have a iPhone little kind of pages notes page where I write down the information that I need to know. And, you know, one of the hardest things for me is remembering a character's name if I've never had them on the show before.
Oh,
if they're
right.
A new character. So like, yeah. I will quite often be in the middle of talking to someone and realize how I dismount from the conversation is I say their name. So if it's like, you know, Floofle blah 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 block, I say Floofle blah blah block everybody, and everyone applauds, right? And then sometimes this portion of the interview will be winding down. I'll go, fuck, I don't know their name. And I'll have to subtly as I can reach for my phone and like open up the notes app, which kind of looks rude because the other person's talking, you know, but I'm like, okay, what's their name again? What's their name again? So I should try to memorize everyone's name, but the names are kind of crazy.
Can't you just ask them what their name is? Can't you just say?
I have done that in the middle of shows. Sometimes Paul F. Tompkins is a comedian. He's on every tour date.
Yeah.
And in the UK and Ireland, we have Andy Daly as well. And both of those guys are improv masters. Every once in a while, they'll ask me, why are you looking at your phone? I'll say, I forgot your name. And it's very embarrassing.
Isn't it true that when Paul played Alimony Tony for the first time on the show, like you knew he changed his mind literally as he was being introduced?
Yes, that's happened a couple of times where suddenly something comes up before he is even introduced. And he'll either text me like, hey, I'm going to be this person today. Or in the case of Alimony Tony, which is a character that Paul plays, who is a billionaire who loves paying alimony. He's been married 70 times or so, and he always marries for love. He hopes it works out, but then it ends up not working out. But the thing that's the silver lining about that is he loves paying alimony so much. So that all came about because at the beginning of the show, we have listeners submit catchphrase submissions. And whoever submitted this particular one, their screen name was Alimony Tony. And Paul thought that was so funny. He just burst in as Alimony Tony. He was like, hey, thank you for reading my catchphrase submission. I'm Alimony Tony. And he started doing Alimony Tony. And that's happened a few times. That happened, actually in our last show in, Providence, Portland, Maine.
Write it on your hand and you won't forget.
They all bleed together after a while. But in Portland, Maine, the theater we were at was really trying to juice up the show, I think. So they had a smoke machine going the entire time, which is like very bizarre for an improv podcast. And so there's just this haze over the entire, and it just kept like puffing smoke out. And Will Hines, who's another great improviser who was on that particular show with us, I was about to introduce him and he burst in as the smoke machine operator because it was just like so strange after an hour of doing the show, like it just continuously puffing out haze. So that was very fun. So that stuff like that will happen all the time where something in the moment will occur and it changes what was going to happen, which is a lot of fun.
Amazing. So how's this tour been going? Are you done now with the US portion or do you still
we still have a bit. I think we're halfway through the entire tour at this point. It's good. I think I did my first tour in 2013, I want to say, or maybe even earlier than that. But it was the first season of my television show, the Comedy Bang Bang television show, which spun off from the podcast. And so we've been doing it for a while, like 15 years or so. And this one, for some reason, the logistics of it feels hard. So the I mean, first of all, the economy is bad. Yeah. We're in as they say, a soft recession, but it doesn't feel so soft. It feels pretty hard to me. So you know, prices of the travel has gone up, and then the travel itself just has felt very, very difficult. So that's you know, I won't bore you with the logistics, but just the, you know, rental cars and all this kind of stuff, like everything just seems harder. And then our Boston show got canceled 2 hours before it was supposed to happen because there were explosions under the street,
which never helps.
Yeah. So just this one feels more of a struggle than the others have. But I wonder if 15 years ago, it just it felt easier because I was younger. I don't know. Like, I do think of the one 10 years ago that Paul F. Tompkins and Lauren Lapkus and I did every show.
Yeah.
That one was kind of a crazier one because we didn't get the routing right. It was so last minute. We had a crazy routing where we would play like Texas and then fly to New York and then come back to the West Coast. You know, it was just, and for that, it was tiring, but I don't remember it being like this. So, yeah. So it's been a little tougher. I don't know whether it's aging.
It might be that. Are you planning to die during one of the shows? Is that partially, as you get older, you think this is the way I'm going to go out?
You know, no one wants to die on stage, I feel like.
It's a way to go, isn't it?
It's
memorable.
It's memorable, but the people who have, I can think of like three comedians or something who've died on stage.
Yeah.
It would be great if it were like after your final joke and during your goodnight. I think that would be funny, but it feels like you would bemoan the fact that it was an incomplete show. You know,
that's
like,
true. If it was halfway through, you'd be furious.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so yeah. If it were at the end, I would be fine with it.
Offer refunds as your final act.
I don't know if you get through your final joke, can you? Would you give refunds to people?
Oh, no, not if you got to the end, but if you died like halfway through, I think you would.
Then I think,
you'd be honor bound to offer refunds at that point. Yeah. But once you get on stage, your logistics notwithstanding, once you get on stage, and I've heard a couple of the shows from this tour, and I've been following you guys on Instagram, and some of the shit that you're getting up to on stage seems to be absolutely wild. So is there a sense of abandon and joyfulness once you get on stage?
Yes, definitely. I mean, the shows themselves are the bright spots of touring. I think anyone who tours, musician or comedian or what have you, I think everyone would say like, oh, the good part of touring is being out on stage and doing the shows, because that's always very, very fun. It's the other stuff, the traveling. I mean, that's the thing is like people are paying you to come to them instead of like, you know, everyone just coming to where I live and watching
which
the
you
show.
Tried. You tried.
I tried doing a reverse tour where I just stay here and I fly people in, but it wasn't very feasible. But yeah, the shows have been great, and they've all been wildly different. I've had a lot of new people doing these tours as well, who have never toured with us, which is fun.
Okay.
A lot of comedians who have kind of been newer additions to the roster, have come out with us, which is great. And then just doing things like we had a weird hole, in Atlanta where, someone wasn't coming on till the next day. And Taron Killam, who is from Saturday Night Live and a bunch of stuff, he was on that night with us. And I was like, you know what? Let's just get your two buddies in the Calvin's twins out for one show. And so I flew those guys out. And the Calvin's twins have been on for now something like 15 years, and they're fan favorites, and they only do like one episode every year at best, maybe every couple of years.
Yeah.
And so it was just like, that's really fun for me, is like knowing, because we don't announce who's going to be on the shows beforehand other than Paul and I. So it's always a surprise. So that particular show, I had Paul come out, and then we also had Edie Patterson from the Royal Gemstones come out as her character Bean Dip, mm-hmm. Which is a fan favorite, and people were stoked about that already. And then then I was like, okay, we have some entrepreneurs coming out, and they are the owners and proprietors of the Calvin's. The minute I said Calvin's, everyone was like, what? And then Taron had bought these inflatable horses that they all rode out on, and it was a surprise to us, which was very, very fun. And it devolved into horse boxing. He had taped taped boxing gloves on their hooves. And then I like battled all three of the horses at one time at a certain point. It was just like craziness. But that's very, very fun for me, is to have something, you know, that people are going to be excited about. That's a surprise. That's always very fun.
So you've been talking about this tour on the show as the sort of Comedy Bang Bang All-Stars tour.
Sure. I mean, yeah, that's hype, but yes.
Yeah. But did that mean that you were planning to go into this going, okay, this is going to be characters that people know, characters that people love?
Not especially, because actually a lot of people have been doing new stuff.
Okay.
It's just more like these are, in my mind, great improvisers. You know, the thing about the tours is everyone gets busier and busier as the show goes on and on. And so 10 years ago, Paul F. Tompkins and Lauren Lapkus and I could do every episode on the tour. And we went to Australia, and we did Canada and the US, and you know, we were all free to do that, and we were all available and had nothing else going on. The longer we tour, the more all of these comedians get very successful and can't do so many shows. So it's really a puzzle for me. So like, for instance, I bring up Taron Killam. He could only do 3 shows.
Okay.
So it's figuring out everyone's availability and figuring out what shows they can do, and then trying to get a good mix of people who complement each other. And so it really is just like trying to get people that I know the fans like, and trying to see how many shows they can do. And Edie Patterson was just on. She did, I think, 5 shows, and she could only do 5, you know. And it's just, you know, it's always a surprise for people, but I know that they're people that they're going to enjoy seeing.
Amazing. So over in the UK and Ireland as well. So you have Paul, as you said.
Yes.
You have Andy Daly, which is amazing, because those guys are just next level.
They're two of the best who have ever done it. They have been doing it since the very beginning, 17 years ago. And all of the episodes that they do together are number one listened to episodes. So when I found out that Andy was going to do the UK and Ireland, which was a surprise to me, because Andy has turned down like almost every tour we've done.
Oh, really? Okay.
He did the West Coast leg with us once, where he did, I think he did most of those shows on the West Coast, which is like 5 shows. He did that once maybe 7 years ago, and that was all he could do because he has several children and he was busy raising them. And so I sent him the availability of or the tour dates, like, hey, do you want to do any of these? And he wrote back like, I can do the UK and Ireland. And I was flabbergasted that he he had the time to do this. And I was like, are you sure? Really? And so I normally I would keep that a surprise that Andy was coming with us. Yeah. But it's so special. I think people will want to know that, and will want to be, they'll feel like they missed it if they didn't come to it. So we announced that Andy was going to be there, and these are going to be interesting shows, because for the most part, it's just Paul, Andy, and myself. So it's a little bit like the tour that I did with Lauren and Paul and myself, where it's just the three of us.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so, yeah, these shows are going to be, I think, kind of unique, because it's just the three of us doing the shows. We're not bringing anyone else. There may be some surprise guests here and there, but but yeah, it's going to be really fun, I think.
One of my favorite things on Comedy Bang Bang is when you have Paul and Andy play multiple characters, and you and sometimes other people will manipulate the situation so that they have to have a conversation with themselves.
Yes.
Which is amazing. So
that's very fun. That's one of the tricks, is you can always, and you always keep that in the back of your mind. Once someone starts doing two characters at one time, you're like, okay, at what point am I going to ask them to talk to themselves? And you usually like let them establish, you know, the other character before going like, hey, but what do you think about this first character that they were playing? It's very fun. So I'm sure there will be quite a bit of that going on.
And Andy as well is responsible for one of my favorite moments on Comedy Bang Bang, which is the multiple suicides.
Yes. Attempts. Yes.
The first floor window, in fairness. So,
yes, which I think is something that Jason Manzoukas and I, that's one of the only times we planned to do something. I think we talked about it beforehand of like,
oh, really? Okay.
What was that it? Or, I think what we talked about beforehand was like, I think on that episode, wasn't it spurred by us breaking character and talking to Andy as himself?
Yes, trying to talk him down, trying to talk him off the ledge because he was having dark thoughts.
Yes. Yeah. And that was the one thing that Jason and I kind of were like, let's surprise Andy and do this. And so we had talked about that beforehand. And I think that's what led into him like cycling through all of his characters, because that was a recurring theme with Andy Daly's characters, was that they eventually all would have thoughts of suicide by the end of talking to them. So we were like, let's talk to Andy as himself to say, like, you know, hey, why do all of your characters do this? So it was very fun.
So one last thing before I want to talk about films with you.
Oh yeah.
As well,
this is the Empire Podcast.
Film podcast, obviously.
Of course.
I saw an interview with you from about a year or 2 years ago, and you were talking about the fact that you don't really have improv training.
No, I don't.
Which is wild to me.
Yeah, I never, like, I got into comedy in a different way. I got into comedy in a strange way, but it was basically like I was trying to be a writer here in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I had written various things. I'd written a pilot, a television pilot. I don't think I wrote my first movie yet. That was about a year after I started comedy, but I'd written a television pilot and a few other, I'd written plays and stuff like that. And, my friend who I had been in a play with up in Sacramento, I sent her the pilot and she said, I don't like it. she was like, I don't love your writing, but because it was sort of a drama.
Okay.
And she was like, why are you trying all this drama? Like, you're a very funny guy. Have you ever thought about doing comedy? And I had grown up with a big love for comedy and an appreciation for it. I used to watch SCTV and Monty Python and SNL and all this stuff growing up. And I used to love stand up, and I'd read books about stand up, and I'd always loved it, but I'd never thought about doing it because I thought it was like too hard to do or something.
Yeah.
I just didn't know how anyone ever started doing it, you know? So, so my friend was like, I have a friend who runs a show, here in Los Angeles, and you should do comedy. And I can get you on it. And that friend turned out to be Mary Lynn Rice Cub, who's a great comedian and was on the show 24, with Jack Bauer, of course. And so my friend and I, we didn't do stand up. We did a weird sketch that was like a sort of improv sketch. Like, we had the beats of it and then we improvised around it.
Okay.
So that went really, really well. And it was a show that had like, David Cross on it, and the regulars were like David Cross, Sarah Silverman, Janine Garofalo. It was people like that. Like, my friend did me this incredible favor getting me on this show with like amazing comedians, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it went really, really well. And they asked me to come back 2 weeks later and do something else. And, and then I just kind of fell into doing comedy. At that point, I was a comic because I was like doing it all the time. The way I got into comedy is doing these weird improv sketches, but I never had any training for it. And then I became a writer on the TV show, Mr. Show.
Yeah.
And, I knew of improv because I'd seen like The Groundlings and a lot of short form, but I didn't know really any long form improv. So when the UCB Theater moved out to LA, and I just worked with Matt Besser, who's one of the founders of the UCB, on a pilot, and he knew that I was producing the most popular stand up show in LA. So he said, hey, come do it at my theater, move from the venue you're at and move it over to my theater, which turned out to be a really good move. But I started like looking around at like the improv, and I really loved watching the shows, and I loved like analyzing, oh, okay, that's why improvisers do this, or that's interesting. Okay. I knew the basic principle of yes and.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And don't think, which is the UCB's motto of just like say whatever comes out of your head.
Okay.
And I think in my stand-up, because I'd done stand-up a little too, but I think in my comedy career, I had been sort of a victim of overthinking things and trying to plan stuff, which is so weird because I started doing these weird improv sketches, but then I became known as a writer. So I would like write everything I did. And I fell into this trap of like not being in the moment. And when I would do stand up, I would like write these jokes and try to do them. And then anytime I went off script, my friends were always like, that's what I like about your comedy. Like, you should do more of that. And I was like, oh, no. So it's been an interesting ride of doing this podcast where it originally started as me talking to comedians and me sort of knowing their bits because I was producing the show and I'd seen their bits so much. So I was sort of doing what is on a talk show, like known as a pre-interview, where I knew everything they were going to say. And I was kind of setting up their jokes. And then I just kind of fell in love with like getting rid of the pre-interview and just being in the moment. And that's where I think the podcast really started to shine. But I don't have any like necessary, you know, I don't have training. I don't know why what I'm doing works. You know, I couldn't analyze it because I've never taken the classes. I know sort of the teachings, but I've just never taken any class.
It's so interesting because it doesn't come across that way in anything that you do. Because, you know, I guess one of the big principles of improv as well, and I haven't done improv either, but I've read around it, is obviously what you just said, don't think and yes and, but listening is also hugely important.
Yes.
And being able to bring things full circle, I guess that's part of the Harold.
I think that is something that you know, it's in the format of Comedy Bang Bang, trying to bring things around and end on a big callback or something like that it's admirable when it works out. But I think in the format of Comedy Bang Bang, it's not necessary.
Don't force it.
Yeah. I'm always like listening and trying to figure out, what can we bring back? What can we bring back? But at the same time, it's not necessary. It's like not one of those hard and fast rules for Comedy Bang Bang. So normally, like, when we're doing a live show, I'm trying to end on a big, big laugh. Hopefully it's a laugh that can be a callback to something else. I would say 50% of the time that works out. But normally what I'm trying to end the show is like, I'm looking at the time saying, okay, we've done enough time. No one's going to feel ripped off. And yet we haven't done so much time that they're fidgeting in their seats going like, when the fuck is this going to end?
Yeah.
So I'm just looking for the biggest laugh at that point, and then that's when I end the show and I say that's our show. But yeah, it's the basic principles of improv of like yes and. I was talking to Connor Ratliff, who's a great improviser, about this.
He's amazing.
And he was talking about this the other day with me about how invariably anytime he puts up a clip of improv on YouTube, after a while, people like improvisers will start writing in the comments about what he's doing wrong in improv. And it's like, oh no, you didn't yes and this or something like that. Yes and is not a hard and fast rule of like, you can never disagree with anyone on stage. Because we disagree with each other on stage all the time. It is merely that when someone establishes a reality, you cannot deny it and say, you know, if someone says like, isn't it great being in space on this rocket? You can't say we're not on a rocket. We're on Earth standing in an Amazon warehouse. You know what I mean? That's the basic premise of yes. And it's not about like someone saying like, well, I want to do this. And someone saying, well, you can't do that. You know, there are times when you can say, no, you can't do that. And it works. I don't know. I've like learned all of this through osmosis and on my own talk show. That's, you know, if we ever had an actor on who had never done improv, I would sort of lead them into it by saying, okay, look, this is kind of conversational improv. They didn't know the questions I was going to ask. Right. Okay. So I would say like, if I ever ask you a question, like, hey, have you ever, been, when you like here was one question that was cut out of a show, but like, hey, when you played Madison Square Garden, were you worried that you'd get hit in the face with basketballs that were being thrown? You know, and I would say the worst thing you can do is say like, no, because no, the I was doing stand up and the basketball team was not playing. And because that leads you into going like, oh, okay.
Yep.
Well, never mind then, you know? Can't so I would say, just say yes to any question. Like, just get in the habit right now of just saying yes to any question, and then we'll riff on it. So it was like, hey, were you ever afraid of being hit in the head with a basketball? And then you would see these actors who are used to being real. That is their bread and butter, is like bringing reality to a thing, kind of like wanting to say no. And so, because like, no, of course not. That's not real. But then like taking a deep breath and saying, yes, I was afraid of being hit in the head with basketballs. And I was constantly saying like, you know, can you guys aim a little high, you know, higher above my head while I'm trying to do my jokes? And then it leads into us riffing and doing stuff. So that's the basic premise. But we deny people's stuff all the time and say no in the middle of stuff. So it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. The rules are meant to be broken.
Yes, exactly.
But it's really interesting when you have people on the show that you can, actors, and you can actually feel them clicking with the format of the show. I mean, you had John Hamm back on the podcast the last episode, really.
Yeah, he's been on several times.
He just gets it.
He loves to do bits. That's the thing is like actors, it can be an adjustment for them to be on Comedy Bang Bang because they're used to doing just interviews where people are interested in their work, much like you're doing with me right now. But they would much rather just do bit. Like 75% of them get finished doing their first episode of Comedy Bang Bang and say, that was the greatest thing. I didn't have to talk about myself. And I just got to do bits the whole time and just had fun. Yeah. Like, this is the best podcast that I've done on this podcast tour that I've done. So that's what I think is really fun, is like getting people who are just locked into nothing is serious. I'm going to ask stupid questions. I don't care about the answers. It's just leading us into bits. And that's what's really fun.
Tatiana Maslany is another one who's just absolutely amazing.
She was a fan of the show, who I met because she came to a live show in San Diego at Comic-Con.
Wow.
And I was a fan of Orphan Black. And then she and her co-star Christian Brune would listen to the show all the time. And that's what they were bonding over when they were filming Orphan Black, is like episodes that would come out. And so they both came to the show. The first time I ever met them, they came dressed as Ninja Turtles and Ninja Turtle masks, thinking it was Comic-Con and everyone would be dressed up as stuff. And they were the only people dressed as anything. But that was the first time I met them. And yeah, so she's great on the show because she's a fan. And Jack Quaid is another one who kind of grew up listening to it, I think.
That's terrifying. That's a terrifying prospect. Just a thought.
But he gets it. He's like one of those rare actors who says, can I do a character as well? And so he'll do his interview as himself, non-serious, and then segue into doing a character. It's really great when a celebrity locks in with the format like that.
And you must have had the opposite happen as well. You don't have to name names, obviously.
But. No, but I mean that, especially in the earlier years, that's always a fear of mine, booking someone that I don't know personally who is like booked through a publicist. You kind of go like, you have to feel around and go, do they know what the show is? And then sometimes you'll hear, yes, they're a big fan. That's true 90% of the time when publicists say it. Sometimes publicists just say stuff like that.
Yep.
And it's not true. That's happened a couple of times where someone arrives and I've been told they're a big fan. They go, so what is this show? And you go, oh boy. And then you explain like, okay, well, it's these comedians are doing characters. There's been a couple of times where they go, I have to sit through people doing characters. You know, it's like, so that's always the fear. But we try to ask as many questions beforehand to make sure that they're not coming in totally blind. Like I had David Desmalchin on recently, and I was like in my head about it for about a day before, going like, what's he going to think about this experience? I was like, God, what if he thinks this is stupid? And then he arrived and was like, hey, you know, I was helping my friend out who was your set designer on your TV show, and I painted a part of your set. And he was like, I was a big fan of the TV show. I was like, oh, great. You know what it is. Oh, thank God. That's always like a relief for me when people finally say that they know what the show is.
I have had the exact same experience. I've had publicists say, oh, this director would love to be on your show. He listens all the time. And then I walk into the room and he clearly has never heard of the podcast or has no idea who I am, which nobody should, in fairness. But,
I mean, it happens a lot where I do a movie podcast as well, called Scott Hasn't Seen, mm-hmm. where I talk to directors and actors and comedians and people like that. And every once in a while, there will be someone I know doesn't know what the show is. And I kind of can treat them like I can do interviews several different ways. Like I can do a serious interview, no yeah. problem. And I've done those. And that is a skill set I have. I don't really use it on Comedy Bang Bang itself because that's just a silly show and it's meant to be really silly. So I try to keep it light, but I can do serious interviews. And so like talking to Shane Black, for instance, big thrill because I'm a big fan of his work. I was able to do, you know, a pretty serious, just thoughtful interview, knowing he doesn't know the comedy that I've done, you know. But then, you know, someone will come on who, you know, we just had Jeremy Slater on, who wrote the Mortal Kombat movie mm-hmm. and the upcoming Coyote versus Acme.
Yes.
And that was through a publicist. And I was like, okay, well, how silly can we get here? And when he walked in, he was like, by the way, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I was like, oh, thank God. Okay. I can be myself.
I don't have to pretend. I don't have to pretend I'm someone else. Oh, that's amazing. So, Scott, I said we should talk about film as well.
Yes.
And you've been very generous with your time.
Oh, sure.
But I said at the beginning, I introduced you as an actor first. That was alphabetical, of
Thank
course.
You. Yes.
But it's also undeniable. You are in Austin Powers and Goldmember.
That's right. That's one of the few movies I'm actually in.
Do people recognize you from behind? Because that's basically all
you see. Yeah. So that was a very unique experience where I auditioned to be in Austin Powers Goldmember, and the role was the young Michael Caine. Yeah. Like Michael Caine was playing Austin Powers' dad, and they were going to do flashbacks in the movie. Uh-huh. And so I worked up a Michael Caine impression, which, you know, it was probably terrible, but the akin to like, hello, I'm Michael Caine, you know, stuff like that. So it was like basically like that. So I worked up a Michael Caine impression. I did the audition. Then I didn't hear back for a long time. And I was just like, well, I guess I didn't get that. But then months and months and months later, I heard I got it. With the caveat, I had to go meet Mike Myers and Jay Roach to see if I was right for it. And I was like, if I'm right for it, what does that mean? And I went down to the studio, and I remember this very vividly. They were in this giant studio rehearsing like these bits that Mike Myers was going to do. And he was doing like this leg bit, which I think is number three, like uncrossing and crossing his legs or something like that.
Yeah.
And I like watched and I laughed, and then they broke and came over to me. And I had like had dinner with Mike Myers once through Dave Foley. But I didn't really know him, but like, you know, they knew I was on Mr. Show.
Yeah.
And they knew Odenkirk and Cross, and, so they were very generous, and like both of them talking to me about Mr. Show and what the process was like. They were like very interested in comedy. And so we had like a 20-minute conversation about comedy. And then they go like, all right, well, turn around. Let's get to it. I was like, what? What's happening right now?
You don't want to hear those words at the start of any audition.
And so I turned around. They're like, that'll work. And I'm like, what is going on right now? So it turns out, since I auditioned the first time, they had acquired these clips of a Michael Caine movie that he made in the 60s that they were going to cut into the film for any time Michael Caine was facing the camera. And then anytime he was not facing the camera, they were going to use me as like a body double. So the part no longer had any lines. But it was like me walking around doing these physical bits, right? So I was like, oh, okay, well, that's a bummer. But I mean, you know, it still is nice to be in the movie.
It's there.
And I have to say, like, when I was on set, they were very generous, where like Jay and Mike, the writer, were like coming up to me saying, like, hey, what do you think about this bit? you know, is how would you punch it up? Or, you know, they were like treating me like a peer, you know, and not like a background actor. So it was like a nice experience, you know, but it is very funny. The fact that I'm in this movie, have no lines, and you just see my back. And that's like the one movie. It's like the biggest movie I was ever in. And it's like, you know, kind of embarrassing, but at the same time, it's like funny, you know,
it's terrific.
Then the addendum to this story is the next time I saw Jay Roach, I was doing punch up for Meet the Fockers, the sequel to Meet the Parents. And, this is before it came out, before they had shot it. They did a round table where people pitched jokes and also like scenes and stuff like that. And weirdly, I pitched a scene which ended up not from them copying it, but just parallel thought that ended up in the Knives Out sequel, where I pitched because Robert De Niro is this FBI guy who can see through anyone lying. I was like, it would be really fun if they went to a murder mystery party and Robert De Niro like immediately knew who did it and like was acting like the FBI guy he is and ruined the party for everyone.
Yeah.
And I was like, I thought this was a great idea for a scene. They ended up not using it in Meet the Fockers, or probably even thinking it was a good idea. But then you watch Glass Onion, and that happens in Glass Onion. And I was like,
great scene. Yeah.
So that's the next time I saw Jay Roach, and he walks into the room, like all the writers are assembled, and Jay gets there a little bit afterwards. He walks in the room, sees me, and goes, "Hey!" And I'm like, "Hey, he remembers me. This is great." We do the entire 8-hour, 10-hour day. We're saying goodbye. He was like, "That was so great, everyone. Thanks so much." And he says to me, he's like, "Good to see you again." And we gotta, and then he mimes playing basketball. And I'm like, he thinks he knows me from playing basketball. He thinks he knows me. He like obviously recognized me, but couldn't place me. And the whole time was like, I think I've played basketball with him.
That's amazing.
But then I've seen him since then and he knows who I am. So because I also know his wife. So it all worked out. But that is the saga of Austin Powers Gold Member.
That's amazing. His wife, of course, being Susanna Hoffs.
Yes.
Of the Bangles.
Yes. She has been on the Comedy Bang Bang podcast a few times and then was in the TV show as well. So occasionally I'll see them at a concert and Susanna will be like, Scott Aukerman!
And mime playing basketball.
Yes, exactly.
Which is it. Could you play the back of Ian McKellen in any other movie, do you think?
I think so. I think if he were to continue being Alfred in the Batman franchise, I would love to do that. I would love to buttle with my butt.
Turn around. Let's get started.
Yes. I mean, I think Mike Myers announced that they were doing another Austin Powers or something because he filmed those Dr. Evil commercials.
Yeah.
People were all saying like, we got to get you in there, you know? So I think what's funny about it is I feel I talk about Austin Powers more than he talks about Austin Powers. And I've been keeping the brand alive for the Comedy Bang Bang fans. So it would be a very funny in joke to have just my back in the new Austin Powers movie. But I'm sure he has no idea that the fans of Comedy Bang Bang have kept this alive.
We'll make sure he knows. But would you see a scenario where he had you looking at camera, maybe as yourself, and you turn around.
And then Michael Caine plays my Michael back.
Caine. Yep.
I love that idea.
Yep.
I'm in old age makeup. I don't know.
Not necessarily. Michael Caine's got range. He could play your back.
I guess they could use Irishman technology to de-age him, although the Irishman technology didn't de-age their bodies at all. Walking around doing the Biden shuffle with young faces.
That would be
very funny. These are all in jokes that I'm sure Mike Myers has no interest in entertaining, but the fans of Comedy Bang Bang would love it.
We'll make it happen. And you have also directed as well. You directed the Between Two Ferns movie, of course, because in case people don't know, we co-created it.
Co-created the Between Two Ferns with Zach. Yeah.
Which is one of the funniest things.
Thank you. Yes. That was very fun. We did the shorts for a long time. And then we'd been trying to crack the idea for a movie for a while. And we'd had, similar to the Meet the Fockers roundtable, we'd had roundtables with comedians, like asking them, like, what do you think the plot of a Between Two Ferns movie could be? At one point, we're getting too, almost too, like, into the theme of between, we were talking a lot about the theme of Between Two Ferns of like, what is it? Well, it's anti-celebrity culture. That's like very important to Zach, is like puncturing the sort of pompousness of the celebrity interview, right? So it's anti that. So we were getting very into the theme and going down the rabbit hole of like, okay, well, what if the plot is Zach is on a quest to unplug the internet? He finds out there's an electrical outlet that the entire internet is like plugged into, and it's like a quest. We started getting very into that, and it started just feeling very heavy and like plot based. At one point we were talking about like it halfway through it turning into a horror movie. and at a certain point, I just, as the years went on, I just like sat up in my bed one day, I feel like, and I was just like, it's so much simpler than this. Like, it's just a road movie where he has to collect 10 interviews.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's trying to get from one coast to the other coast. Like that's just as simple as it can be. We don't have to worry about this fucking complicated plot. So when I figured out that, I called Zach up, I go, I think it's this. And he was like, yes, great. Yeah. Love it. And then we went to Netflix and it was like one of the easiest pitches of just like, we kind of want to do a movie. They're like, great, here's $20 million. So that was the good part about it. And then making it was very tough.
Yeah, you've talked about this in the past, that it was a tough experience.
Well, it was it was definitely fun. Everyone had a lot of fun. Zach at one point was saying like, I haven't had this much fun on a set since The Hangover. It was like very, very fun to make, but doing an improvised movie is tough. And what I was really wanting to do is not to do it like the Christopher Guest movies, where a lot of, especially like Best in Show is a little more plot focused, but a lot of the Christopher Guest movies, like the plot happens in interviews. This is getting very into the minutia of this, which I it's hope is okay for your it's Empire podcast. But okay, so if you watch a Christopher Guest movie, a lot of plot advancement is done in interviews. So Fred Willard will be talking, and he'll be telling a story about something that happened. And it's very funny because you find Fred Willard, he's so hilarious. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of the laughs come in, is like someone talking about something that happened or someone talking about something that's going to happen. But I really wanted to do an improvised movie that was narrative based, where we improvise the plot, right? So it is a simple plot of like, hey, we got to go get these 10 interviews and deliver them to Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
So that structure was there, but then the scenes themselves were always like up to the day of whatever would happen. So
Jesus.
And that's very difficult to pull off.
Stressful.
The part where it worked the best is stuff in the first act, where Zach is working for a public access TV station. Mm-hmm. We did so many scenes in there that were so funny. That would have worked really, really well for a TV show that was set in a public access station.
Yeah.
And we shot hours and hours and hours worth of that stuff. And then, you know, me knowing this, but not realizing it in the moment, like first acts are always the things that you cut because people want the movie to start, you know? And that is the thing that when you're writing a script, people tend to write their first acts really long because they fall in love with the world building and the setup. And it's always fun to set up a character's quirks and all this kind of stuff. And so we shot so much in the first act. And when we were testing the movie, it was like, we have to cut all this. Oh, shit. And so we have just hours and hours of stuff that's so fun. And when we were in a controlled environment of this set we had built for the public access TV station, we had so much fun for those 3 weeks of shooting. And then when we start getting out on the road and improvising scenes, it just gets harder because plot stuff is harder on the road. So it was a real learning curve for me. The thing I did, which I was very proud of, was I was intent on having options. When you're doing improv stuff, the worst thing that can happen, or any movie, is like only having the budget to shoot like what's on the page, and you can't really cut anything because then your movie isn't going to be long enough or isn't going to make sense. And like, we shot so much stuff that we shot whole subplots that are not in the movie anymore. Like the characters, Zach's parents and his family are no longer in the movie, which is a bummer because they were all really great actors.
Yeah.
But it was dragging the movie down. And so we had the ability, we had so much material that I was able to put together a movie that makes sense and is funny all the way through. But that said, it was really tough to do. And I think if I were to direct another movie, I would want to have a script that I loved and like improv around the script instead of basically like coming in. The script was a bunch of pages of us just like ideas of what might happen with no dialogue. It was very difficult to do. And then we're also doing these Between Two Ferns episodes on top of it.
Yeah.
While we're shooting, you know, like anytime a celebrity had a moment, we would set up the Between Two Ferns set and then that's a whole different skill set, is like doing these fake interviews in the middle of the movie. So I'm proud of the fact that it came out as well as it came out, but it also, like, I look at it and go like, oh my God, I wish I could just direct a movie that has a script.
is that happening? Is there other plans afoot?
There, every once in a while, something will come. There's a script that I have been trying to direct for a while that it all comes down to casting, and we're just trying to figure that out. I don't know. You know, the business, the Between Two Ferns movie came out in September of 2019. It did really well, as far as I was concerned. Netflix has weird metrics, and they were disappointed with 30 million people watching it. But I thought it did really well, and it was very well received around town. And so I took a lot of meetings in like October, November, then about what to direct next. And there are some movies that came out that I ended up passing on, and others I didn't get. And then the town shuts down for Christmas, and then by the time everything kind of ramped back up again, suddenly COVID happened.
Mm-hmm.
And
that'll do it.
I was getting like off of the Between Two Ferns movie, I got probably 20 scripts sent to me of like, hey, would you want to direct this? And I was taking all these meetings. COVID happens. It totally derails the momentum of my career. And the business has changed. I've said to my agent at one point, like, remember when I got sent 20 scripts? Does that happen anymore? They go, no, it doesn't happen anymore. Like, no one, there just aren't jobs like that anymore. No one's making these movies anymore.
Yeah.
So it's tough. On the one hand, you got to look on the bright side and go like, you know what? It would have been terrible to be in the middle of making the Between Two Ferns movie and suddenly COVID happens, like in the middle of production, and shuts us down and we never get back going again. And I have to piece it together using whatever we had pre-COVID or something. So it's like, it's such a blessing that we were done with it. And we finished it in 2019, but at the same time, it's kind of just such a bummer for my career trajectory. But at the same time, like, look, I got to direct one movie and it came out pretty funny. So it's like, you know,
if you listen to this, Hollywood, and I know you are, give Scott another movie to direct.
Yeah.
You bastards.
I could do a good job.
Yeah, of course you can. Absolutely.
And like, you know, if you're looking at the Between Two Ferns movie, that was intentionally shitty looking. I could work. I mean, our DP was great and like would get very frustrated with me saying like, can I make this shot look good? And I'd be like, we don't have time. Run and gun. This is supposed to look bad. And at one point, like, he just said to me, like, if I had half hour, I could make this. I could make this one particular shot look really good. No, we did. Yeah. We honestly, like, we did. And I look at that shot and I go, like, damn, should I have made the whole movie like this? But again, I was trying to go as fast as I could and get as much material so that I could edit it down to the 80 minutes or whatever it turned out to be. And that's a success as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, I would love to make a movie that looked good because I gave the DP more time to actually work on shots because there was a script.
Two very, very quick last things, yes. If you don't mind. in terms of Between Two Ferns, how much were the celebrities in on it? Like, how much were your interviewees aware of the questions Zach was going to ask?
So I think if you look at the credits of the Between Two Ferns movie, which is where we have the outtakes, the only time we've ever released outtakes. And by the way, these are constantly like being shared on Instagram, like, you know, accounts. Obviously, I would prefer if Between Two Ferns had an account and we're sharing this and that's how people saw it, but it's just people ripping it off of Netflix.
Why doesn't it?
I don't know. Anything Between Two Ferns related is like a big ordeal. Okay. But so if you look at the bloopers, though, you'll see that the celebrities did not know any of the questions that were being asked because they're outright like laughing at how funny the questions are. So that's I think, what was really fun about it. The one exception was Barack Obama. When we interviewed him, I pushed as hard as I could for it being improvised. And at the end of the day, they said, there is no way that the sitting president of the United States will do this and not know what the questions are going to be. There's no way he'll do a comedy video and not have a script to it. So we acquiesced in that case. But I got to say, then 2 years later, I pushed for it during Hillary Clinton and I won that one. I was just like, I said, this is our process. You got to respect our process. She's got to not know what the questions are beforehand. And they go, well, Barack Obama did. I said, well, he was the sitting president. She's not. and I won that one. And so she didn't know what the questions were beforehand.
There's an element in that interview of her potentially not reacting entirely well, would you say? Or is she absolutely playing the game?
No, that's manufactured.
Okay.
I mean, I think for the most part, everyone that we did it with was pretty having a good time for the most part. I will say the one time Zach got really felt like the celebrity was not having fun was Sean Penn, because he was so intense. And you can see it in the video. At one point he's like, you know, I might knock you the fuck out at one point. And Zach felt that was real in the moment and started thinking in his head like, oh, Sean's not having a good time. So he signaled to me like, cut, we gotta stop. Like, we gotta stop this interview. And because he felt really weird about it, I was thinking, this is great. Sean's a great actor. This is going really well. And then we cut, and then Sean was like, hey, do you want to go to a bar to Zach? And like, it was all fine, but like Zach felt in his head about it at the time. So
it just
like
exudes presence. Yes. Sean Penn, right?
So exactly. But no, everyone for the most part, I got into I would, much like on the Comedy Bang Bang TV show where I was trying to lead actors into like what makes a good fake interview, I sort of had my spiel, and because we had to do, you know, 15 of these or whatever for the Between Two Ferns movie, I had no idea if anyone knew what it was when they would get cast in the movie. I just had my spiel where I was like, okay, so this is a fake interview. Zach's going to ask rude questions intentionally. You know, act just how you would in the moment if someone were asking you this, you know, like be upset, you know, whatever you want to do. But that is part of the fun of this, is he's going to ask rude questions, you know. And it was very funny because Keanu Reeves did it, and I was like, going, this is probably the 8th time or 10th time I've done it on this movie, because he was kind of late in the experience. I was like, okay, so Zach's going to ask you rude questions. And he goes, I know. That's why I'm doing this. I was like, oh, okay, great. You know what it is. Okay, awesome. Yeah. So they're all pretty into it and having a good time. And you can see that in the bloopers of just like, you know, John Hamm's like laughing till he's crying in it. And yeah, it's a lot of fun to shoot these.
Amazing. So we're doing this in your studio, which is fantastic. I was a fairly late adopter of Comedy Bang Bang, as in I think I got into it via Are You Talking REM Re Me.
Oh wow.
Not necessarily Are You Talking You Two to Me.
That was the original. If people don't know what he's talking about, I understand. But it's a different podcast that I host with Adam Scott.
Yes.
of Severance fame. It started as a U2 podcast, the band U2. And then we did several other seasons about the band's REM and Talking Heads and Bruce Springsteen. And yeah, so you started on the REM season, which was our second season.
Yes. And I adored it. And it feels to me like you obviously have these incredible relationships with the likes of Paul and Lauren and, you know, Andy, people we've talked about. But it seems to me like one of your real happy places is just riffing with Adam Scott.
I really enjoy it. Adam is someone that I met quite a few years ago on a poker night, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, wow.
And
not basketball around Jay Roach's.
No. But I do remember being in a car with him and saying like, "Hey, I wrote this pilot that I think you'd be good for." And he said, I don't really do TV. Which I thought was very funny. I bring that up to him all the time and he's like, "Why would I have said that? Of course I do TV."
Yeah.
He was a big fan of Mr. Show. So I think he was excited to meet me, which is like put us kind of at a level playing field in a way. So I've never felt like intimidated by him or anything like that. But I really like, he's a good friend and I really enjoy his sense of humor. And, you know, it's just very fun to be in a room with him Yeah, those shows are very unique. I mean, the first time I asked him to do Comedy Bang Bang, he's great because he always just goes like, "Yeah, whatever."
Yeah.
And he's sort of our good luck charm in filming too, because he was in the pilot episode of Comedy Bang Bang, the TV show. He was in the pilot episode of Bajillion Dollar Properties, which is a show my wife created that I produced.
Yeah.
He was in our Michael Bolton Big Sexy Valentine's Day special. And he always just says yes to anything. So it's like, but the first time he said yes to the podcast, I was like, "Oh, I wonder what he's going to be." And he just started doing the silliest, weirdest shit. And I was just like, "God, I love this guy. I love, doing bits with this guy. It's so fun." So yeah, it's so much fun to do those.
He never breaks. He never breaks. I don't recall a time when he dissolves into fits of laughter, whereas you'll have people like Lily Sullivan on Comedy Bang Bang who just giggles constantly. You can hear, you know, PFT in the background.
The one time I can remember that he broke was he was talking about the night he met his wife at this bar, local bar, The Cat and the Fiddle. And we were just, you know, anytime we have a conversation, it's an excuse to do bits, right? So, so it was like, "Tell me about the time you met your wife." And he's like, "Well, I met her at The Cat and the Fiddle, this bar. Something about like, he was talking about the most important things in his life, were, I forget what number one was, but say it's God, right?
Yeah.
And number one is God. Number two is my career, and number three would be my relationships. But then I met my wife, and I said to her, "I have a new number two." And I said, "Did you go to the bathroom right after that?" He's like, "Yep, I immediately went to the bathroom." But I told her I have a new number two. And I do remember like both of us crying laughing at that. And it sounds very stupid if you're hearing it secondhand. But in the moment, it's very fun.
Go and check it out. Go and check it out.
Yes, those shows are very fun to do. Yes. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, Scott, you have been more than generous with your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being interested.
Thank you for being interesting, sir. I will see you in Dublin. And
yes, that'll be great.
It will be fantastic. I will be yelling at you from wherever my seat is.
Okay. I hope you don't do that, but okay, sure.
Do you allow heckles in your shows?
I mean, honestly, we don't love them, but they happen all the time. So,
but in the meantime, I'm going to let you go. And all that remains for me to say is, because I've always wanted to say this, good ep.
Thank you. Good ep. Love good it. Ep.
Thank
good
you, ep. Man. Cheers.
Bye.
Good ep indeed. Thanks again to Scott for being so generous with his time and his equipment, and to his, that sounded rude, and to his excellent team for sending over the audio and working their Comedy Bang Bang magic on it. If you're in the mood for CBB's ground beefing tour, live show tickets, and seeing Scott with Andy Daly and PFT, go to comedybangbangworld.com for venue info and ticket links. And hey, if you do see me in Dublin next week, say hello. I'll know what you mean. And on that note, that is it for me. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.